some other stuff. And he said his last thought, he was thinking that everything was crashing and banging, was, old Bogey's going to be mad at me. And Bogey had been his instructor and always told him never try to outclimb a hill. That's exactly what he did. So he didn't quite make it.
What was the guy's name again?
Tobe Larson.
Tobe Larson?
Yeah.
So you said he bought the plane in Anchorage.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Was it something that, the issues with it, was it something that he should have seen from the get-go? Or?
Oh, if he'd had somebody look at it, maybe he didn't know that much about Cubs or anything. Mm-hmm. But just, yeah, he was a brand new pilot at the time, yeah.
Any sense of about what year or even decade that was?
Oh, probably the early 80s. Somewhere in there.
So you worked out of Fouts till you got this place.
Well, I had a shop. It was about a block and a half from Fouts' runway, but I could go down the road and onto the runway from there. So it worked out quite well for a long time.
Was the Fouts runway there before International?
No. The Fouts runway showed up actually after the flood of '67. They'd had some airplanes, a couple of Cubs or something, and they were taking on, landing and taking off on the street in front of their house, which is now known as Fouts Avenue. Mm. But the flood came by, and they had the opportunity. At that time, you could not bail out of the river. Well, they're going to build a dike. So they hired a drag line and paid the state 2 bits a yard for the gravel and bailed out of the river and made their runway. They did quite well with the flood on their side of it. Nice little strip. It was about 850 feet. Only a slight curve in it.
Super Cub again.
Yeah, that's the same one, yeah.
Pretty comfortable working under.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that made for a good setup. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you just turn the heat down low and a lot of air and pick that chute up and just sit there and plenty of space to work under it. It was good.
How did you, you said this was a paint issue on this plane?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You were.
Had to get it up warm enough so you could paint. It was in the spring, which you couldn't do anything outdoors, really. This brought the temperature up into the 70s. Mm-hmm. Worked out good. And the trouble is that you wouldn't want to do that these days because that heater burned a lot of gasoline. Mm. It liked gasoline. The famous Herman Nelson. I think there's a moose out there somewhere. Okay. But I don't know for sure.
Is that Fouts or over here?
No, I think I was out cutting wood or doing some other fool thing. Mm. Yeah, that's a different airplane. We're just heating up the nose there. I believe that's a Luscombe.
Fouts again?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you can see the hill if you.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's amazing how that area has some of the houses right on the river. Probably some of those are $500,000 or better houses.
Oh, they're big, yes, two of them especially, yeah. Yeah.
Kind of surprises me that some of those river lots stayed available for development as late as they did.
Well, two of those big houses would be right off the wingtip on this deal by the telephone, back behind the telephone pole. Mm. And some people had originally gotten it. They had about 10 or 15 acres there. That's their house in the background. Mm. But then they died, and I don't know how it worked out. But the old building got taken down, and then these two big new houses went up over on the riverbank. Got the dirt and gravel they hauled in. Oof. It's quite a summer. Ooh, my. That was taken at Schrader Lake up in the Brooks Range. The plane in the foreground was a Beaver that had crashed up in the hills. Engine quit. Blown. Fish and Wildlife, as you can see. The coloring. Engine failure. And the one in the background's a DC-3 belonging to Bobby Shulton. And Bobby bought the wrecked Beaver. And he hired me and Buck Maxson to go up and help him get it out. And it was an interesting trip. We're sitting on the ice, the lake ice right there. And I don't know, but what... That must have been just about the finish of it, the way they're setting and we're heating up the engine. Had to change engines. Had to get the floats off at first, get the plane down to the lake, and then go from there. A nice trip. Bobby Shulton owned Northern Air Cargo. And this was kind of an impulse deal he got into. And he's standing there in this little shack, a fishing camp or hunting camp. And his long johns and his suspenders hanging down, and you have to realize it. Pretty well off money-wise, and Buck and I are bitching at him because he's heating up canned chili, and we informed him that we were supposed to have steaks on these jobs. Yeah, Bobby was a tough guy, wasn't much over 5 foot tall. Had cancer for quite a long time before that, and I asked him about it, and he says, yeah, I said, I thought you were supposed to die about, you know, several years ago, Bobby. He said, well, I was. Tell them doctors, I didn't have time for that. I had an airline to start and kids to raise. And he lasted a long, long time. It finally got him. But yeah, he was a tough man. Sharp.
Was he at Fairbanks?
No, basically out of Anchorage. Came from the States originally and was flying up here. I think there's one gold mine it was involved in. We found a receipt book, a little one like you use in a restaurant, where he had signed for 36 pounds of gold. He was flying for Alaska Airlines, Gullwing Stinson's at the time. Back in the late 40s. Funny to believe Alaska Airlines at that time had, I think somebody told me, 36 of these gull wings running around the country. Basically a bush airline.
Is Shulton spelled with a T?
No, S-H-O-L-T-O-N, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Sounds like an interesting guy.
He was. He was a fine guy.
It always never ceases to amaze me up here that you could be at an auction somewhere standing next to someone who's dressed like an old bush rat and think that they're probably barely making it by, and it's someone like Bobby Miller or something worth millions of dollars, and you never tell it.
No, no, you can't.
It's not like
he bought, after this, he bought a, or maybe had him then, his first DC-6 he bought. He got it down in California, his airplane sitting there and supposedly in good shape and everything. And I talked to one of the pilots that was involved in this big trade they had going. And he says, here's this funny little guy comes in, and he's talking and this and that. Hands us a check for the full amount, the airplane. And the next thing you know, one of our foremen comes up and says, who's that guy working on the six down there? And he looked out, and here was Bobby in a pair of old coveralls crawling all through everything on that airplane. They couldn't believe it. Yeah.
I think there's more pictures of this Beaver.
Oh, there should be, yes. And that was when we were going up to look at the thing where it was up in the hills behind the lake.
What lake was it again?
I believe it was Schrader Lake. Mm-hmm. There's two of them up there, Peters and Schrader.
You said this is Brooks Range?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Any idea again on the time frame of this? 80s, 90s? Or?
Let's see. Yeah. Let's see. I'm trying to remember who I was married to at the time. I think it had to be the late 70s. Yeah, I'm not too sure about that. But it seemed, it would have been late 70s, yeah.
Spring?
Spring, yeah.
Who was, do you have any idea who was flying the plane when the engine quit?
No, no idea. It was in the spring because they were on floats. Early summer, I guess you'd say. Oh, that's just a picture of the country around here. Mm. Yeah.
Pretty country.
Yeah, it is. It's up there. No trees in that part of the world.
Is that eastern, western Brookshire?
Well, it's about... I think it's pretty much... It's not too far out of Barter Island.
So eastern.
It's, yeah. That's the helicopter they used to lift the plane up after they got the floats off. It's Buck Maxon there in the foreground, I believe.
So how did the... You said it looks like for a while, if I remember, if this is the set of images, there was a while where the plane was flying, but you flew it back to where the DC-3 was?
No. We had to bring it in with the helicopter. There should be a picture of it. Mm-hmm. Had to get the floats off first and lift it and carry it on down. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't in on that part of the operation. I had got thrown off of my snow machine, and the one behind just ran into me and busted a bunch of ribs or tore them loose. I was hurting.
Is taking the floats off before you take it up by helicopter? You just don't take...
Well, there was no sense carrying that weight.
The weight, okay.
It was a big thing, yeah.
What are... when people do recoveries with helicopters, can it get... Are there issues that you really got to watch out for?
Oh, yeah. There was... I avoided them for years because the first one I was involved in was a mess. You get them underneath there and start flying, and occasionally... the airplane will try to fly that's underneath you. Or it'll start turning and twisting. And there's some people now operating out of Palmer with a great big helicopter, some surplus thing. And they've brought them into here at Chena Marina. And they just come up, pick up the airplane, and bring it in where you want it. And they put bags and nets on top of the wings so this kills all the lift. And then they have a drogue that goes out the back to keep it straight. Oh, yeah, that's... But at first, little bit, nobody really knew how to do it. There were several bad incidents. Yeah, that's Buck and I. Probably about the time we're heading back, yeah.
Looks cold.
It wasn't too bad. I must have hung around zero somewhere in there. See, that looks like the middle of winter, but it's early summer up there. Mm-hmm. That's when they brought the floats in.
The guy was able to land it on a lake?
Yeah, we landed, put everything on a trailer right by the camp. Mm-hmm. We were using this hunting camp, I think it belonged to Jim McGoffin.
But when the engine died, did he land it?
Oh, no, no. He was up in the hills behind there and pretty well tore things up. You can see from the floats are all bent up there in the front. Mm. And, of course, the struts were all broken. The engine was done. Trying to get the engine up to it was one problem. And trying to figure out how to lift it was another problem to get the airplane up. So it was just this was the way to go. And that's it flying homeward.
Mm. Was it just a distance matter that you didn't take it all the way to where there was a shop?
No, this was the cheapest way to go. Mm-hmm. Only had one little bitty lift, and that was it. Mm. It maxed out the helicopter. Mm. It was everything you could do to lift it.
Mm. Yeah, that's looking a little more green-like.
Yeah, we're getting close to town. I sat in the back of the three and kind of kept an eye on things. He didn't have any radios in the Beaver. And when he landed, an international hollers up. I says, "I can't see him at all." And he says, "He's right with us. He just DC-3 landed, and the Beaver landed right with him, so there wouldn't be any problems." There we are, changing engines. We got done with that. Bobby Shelton says that, and he took it up for... Buck took up for a test flight, went around a bit, landed, and everything's fine. We're looking at it. No oil leaks, everything looked good. Bobby looks at us and he says, "You guys, you stand there and talk about your wives and your kids and your businesses, get all this done, and everything's perfect in about 3 days. He says, "At my shop in Anchorage, it would have taken about 2 weeks and it would have limped, farted, and blew smoke on the test flight."
Is that Bobby there?
No, that's the other fellow. That was the co-pilot. Mm-hmm. Mark. Mark something. I can't remember his last name. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I suppose it's only experience that before you go out to work on something like this, you know everything you need to bring along.
You learn as you go, yeah. Yeah, I always preferred to go look at one first and then get all squared away, because people tell you this and that, and they forget to look at something else. But in this case, I couldn't. But we had a brand new engine and a bunch of stuff, so we were in pretty good shape anyhow.
Was there a standard kit you brought along for the types of repairs with extra parts?
It varied. As you can see, that tripod, that was made out of some steel sections of an old radio tower. They're about 4 foot long, and it slid together, so you could take them along with you pretty easily to make up your tripods. For leading edge repairs and that, stovepipe was the thing to take. Because you take 6-8 feet of stovepipe, it's just a little bitty piece to throw on the plane. Then you have to kind of trim her up a little bit and adjust and fit it on. It's already half formed. Sometimes you have to take sheet metal along. That's a little problem. Some aluminum. But basically, you know pretty much what to take. Depending on what it is. You know, engine change, cylinder change, repair something. Hard to say.
Did you generally bring along something to do welding with, oxyacetylene?
No, not generally, well, unless you knew you needed it. Mm-hmm. There was one case down at Minnow Flats. I had to take the torch and everything down there. But I have a backpack set up, mm-hmm. or did at the time. Nobody wanted to carry it too far, but it was on a pack frame. I've still got it.
You guys look like you're in a pretty good mood.
Oh, well, the sun is shining and things are going along good, sure.
Wind's not blowing?
Yeah. Yeah, we had good weather. Lucked out there. You notice how stiff I seem to be standing. I had a towel and a cargo strap around my ribs. Cinched up pretty tight.
You said something about the colors on that plane indicate it's fish and wildlife?
Yeah, the orange and white.
Federal or?
Well, I'm not too sure which one's which. They still paint them the same color, though. They're kind of orange and gray now, I think. But yeah, that was. Which one it is, I forget now.
Nothing like broken ribs to let you know every movement you make.
They weren't broken so much, they just kind of pulled away from my back. Yeah. I look like I'm bracing up in front of the colonel. But there wasn't nothing to do but get the job done.
N-715.
Yeah. In Anchorage, the last I knew.
Still flying then?
I don't know. Now there's where the helicopter's bringing it in. I said it was all he could do. Well, we're up at pretty fair altitude, too, up in the mountains there.
No grounding issues this time, like with the engines on the...
No. No problem there.
So someone brought a snow machine up there.
Oh, yeah, we brought it because we had to go up in the mountains to work on it, yeah.
They flew you out there, though, to work on it?
Well, we went up in the DC-3. Bobby Shulton, pilot, captain.
So the snow machine was in the...
Oh, yeah, we took everything up in the 3, yeah. Okay. We had camp gear and food and the machines and tools and the engine, everything we needed. It was a good trip. No fooling around, waiting for different airplanes to bring in different stuff. Probably the first run up. Yeah, that's where it was, up in the mountains. We've got these all out of. Should have started at the other end. As you can see, she's pretty well crunched up.
Yeah. Doesn't look like the wings too tore up, though.
No. I mean, the floats took all the brunt of everything. Snow was deep, I expect, when it hit. Yeah. Seems odd. Seems even wrecked on floats in a country like that, doesn't it?
For some reason, it looks older than most beavers to me.
Well, it's original. somebody here.
You have better ears than I do.
There, it was where it was on the wheels and getting ready to get slung in. Mm. I was still back at camp. Shulton took these pictures and gave them to me.
That does look like altitude.
Oh, yes. He said it wasn't a tree around. Mm. So well above 3,000 feet anyhow.
I can't recognize who those people are.
You know, there's... Let's see. Oh, one of them would be the helicopter pilot. Mm. Maybe both of them. They had a mechanic on board the helicopter, too. Mm. Oh, yeah, but I wasn't in those. There we are, coming home.
Is that a picture you took?
Yeah, I took it out of the window of the three. Mm. And here we are back in town.
Fairbanks?
Yeah. We're loading or unloading, hard to say.
Mm. That's a Northern Air Cargo?
Yeah, it was always referred to as Bobby's DC-3. Mm. I don't know. I had a very good picture of him standing next to it, up close, and I lent it to a friend who wanted to get a copy, and of course I never saw it again. Mm. And I never lent out any more pictures after that.
Mm. It's interesting to me how some of the slides, well, these were prints, I guess, just how some of the photos age different than others.
Oh, yeah, like, yeah.
For example, that one.
I think these were all slides to start with. Mm. Yeah, it is.
What was the total time involved in this recovery?
Oh, I think we're up there. Let's see. About 4 days, I expect. Yeah. 4 or 5 days. I remember, yeah, because I charged about $300 a day then for these trips. And told Bobby we're having a hamburger at the airport. He said, well, what owe you? And I said, let's see, about $1,500. I didn't think about it. He gave me a check, and I stuck it in my pocket and went on home. Told the wife, well, we got a good one to put in the bank, and it was for $2,000. Mm. Yeah. Like I said, he was a real straight guy. Mm. He knew he got his money's worth.
Do you have any idea how the pilot, when the engine quit and he landed up there?
No.
How he got a hold of anybody to...
I have no idea. I imagine that ELT and all the good stuff. Yeah, it's a pretty rough country.
Just think people pay thousands of dollars to go have guided trips up there and you got a paid vacation.
Yeah, supposedly, yeah. Yeah. Bringing it in.
What kind of helicopter is that? Is it a 206?
I think so. Mm-hmm. I say it was all he could do.
Yeah. You guys were up there for 3 or 4 days. I never saw any camp pictures. Did you fly back to Martyr Island?
No. Like I said, there was a hunting camp there belonging to Jim McGoffin, fish camp. He'd take people up there to go fishing or hunt caribou or whatever. And it was a couple of little, actually just summer shacks. But there was one that had a pretty good cook stove in it, and the other had some bunks. It was fine. Comfortable. Otherwise, we'd have slept in the airplane probably, in the three.
Up there on top of it.
Oh yeah, hooking up the lines.
I didn't realize there were so many pictures of this recovery.
Well, like I said, I took a bunch, and Bobby took a bunch. Mm. So, see, the ones here, though, those are all Bobby's. Mm. I think he had a better film or better camera than I did, too. Oh, that's Buck's otter after it spent a good part of the summer in the Noatak River upside down. That's after he got it here to Fairbanks. And it's my wife and the kids there with him when they're little. Yeah. Crashed the upper end of the Noatak River. Bounced a couple times and went over the end of the so-called runway and into the water and upside down. I went up to look at it. All you could see was the belly and the wheels. Spring breakup. Water was high. And the insurance company sent people up to do this and do that, and they got it right side up. And then they said, to hell with it. So Buck picked it up, called me up, and says, I am really hurting. And I went up there and spent 8 or 10 days on that, getting the engine back on, a bunch of stuff working so we could fly it out. So we flew from there to, from the Noatak to Kotzebue. And then I had to come back into town, and he patched up a little more stuff and got some cow, got it squared away a bit and flew it in. It was quite a job.
How did they just overshoot the runway? Or?
Yeah, he just goofed up. Funny guy, he any plane with a tricycle gear, he'd go anywhere and do anything. Mm. And every tail dragger he got into, he wrecked. Mm. Yeah, it was something else. I remember when I was on the phone with Buck and he first told me about it, and I said, well, how's the landing gear? And he's telling me what's going on, and I'm starting to think about what I'm going to need. He says, it's okay, he didn't use that very much. It was quite an airplane. Maxon had it, let's see, I don't know how many years now, but I changed the engine that 8 times. Once it was in a hangar.
Once again, I think I was pulling him out of the slide train, or I think there's more pictures of this going backwards in time.
Oh, probably, yeah. Yeah, if you didn't know the sequence, yeah.
I guess the year of that by the age of the kids.
Oh, boy. Well, let's see, the youngest. Guys, I can't even remember when they were born, to be honest about it.
Well, Lillian must have been born around the late 60s, early 70s.
About in the 70 or 71. Elizabeth was 72, I think.
So this must have been mid-70s here.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, probably in there somewhere there's a fox, because one kept coming over to talk to me while I was working on the airplane. Scrubby-looking thing with a bent tail. Yeah, he was pretty tough-looking. That's on the banks of the Noatak, upper Noatak Valley. There was a... like I said, that fox is probably in there somewhere. I'm under the wing of the airplane. You can see it. Yeah, that's when we were flying it back in. Mm-hmm. How about that? I thought that was an interesting sight.
Oh, yeah, look at the shadow.
Rough country. Mm-hmm. Well, we started to follow. We didn't have any cowling. And windshield was all cracked, stuck full of toilet paper on my side. And we didn't have anything at airplane but my toolbox, tent, a couple sleeping bags, and the bent fin, stabilizer fin. And Buck said later it was the heaviest takeoff he'd ever made. It was so full of silt. Oh, boy. There's a picture somewhere of the silt pouring down on him as we're flying along. Yeah.
imagine it just gets into every little
crevice. Oh, it's unbelievable. Later on, in, it went to Seattle. It got overhauled, or repaired. And I went down to help bring it back with another pilot. And these fellas are saying, look at here. And there was a great big pile of this fine sand. He says, that came out of the stabilizer. He said, we took that off. It took four of us to carry in the shop. And normally one man can pick it right up. Yeah. There were holes drilled in it. It had been washed and washed and washed. A mechanic out of Anchorage named Kippenham, well known for aircraft recovery work. But then the insurance company decided it wasn't worth it.
How do you go about flushing all the silt out? Drill a hole in the end and water?
Yeah, used about a 1-inch hole saw. Drilled a hole right in the skin to start washing the water pumps. Of course, then you got to keep the water pumps going. They're little gasoline things that don't like to run. On and on it goes. Let's see. I think that's here in town. I think I can see a telephone pole in the background. Yeah. Yeah. It's either here or at Kotzebue. No. Yeah, it's here. Yeah, yeah. There's an engine on it. Skinny Jim, back in those days.
Fairbanks?
That's Fairbanks, yeah.
I was trying to see what it looks like, a dome structure in the background.
Yeah, there was a dome hangar at Metro Field.
Was there?
Yeah. Might still be there for all I know. Mm. Haven't been over there for years. Yeah. That was two fellas. There was a USGS camp. That's what it was bringing in stuff for. These two guys were helicopter mechanics. They maintained two of them while they were doing a lot of surveying. I don't remember their names at all. Jeez, I got so dirty on that job, I couldn't stand it any longer after a day or two. And me and the big fella there, we walked out and found a place where the water had gone down, and there was some small pools that were fairly warm in the Arctic on the Noatak River. I mean, that's relative, but they were better than everything else. Splashed around and got all the grease and crap off me for a day anyhow.
Was it just the silt and stuff?
Silt and grease and oil. I was working on the engine. I was trying to get back on the airplane. And trying to do a whole bunch of stuff. Yes. See, the engine here is going on. But it had been taken off. It was laying over 50 feet from the airplane. So my first thing was to get the engine over to the airplane. And I pulled a couple cylinders off, and oh, they looked horrible. They're full of water and rust and oil and everything you can think of. And I thought, oh. But the only way to get it back to town was start that engine, which took a little doing before it was over with. It worked.
Did the engine come loose when he wrecked?
No, it was on it yet. But they took it off when they brought it over the top. You see, you have to take it off and then just bring her straight up and over. No, I wasn't in on that. See, that was insurance companies.
So. That must have been quite a deal flipping an otter over.
Well, it shouldn't have been. Amateurs, they screwed up several times. The Buck says he wore out about two or three crews getting everything as far as it was when I got there.
Did they just tip it over with a great big tripod? Or?
Yeah, tripod. You have to use anchors. In this case, they use barrels with the end cut out, this and that, and a hole through the sides, but in a crossbar, so that it tends to dig in as you're lifting because of the angles. And then you catch on to it, and you start bringing it up, and then you have to re-rig several times before you come back. Then when you get it back, when it's sitting on the nose, or in this case, sitting on the engine and the, well, probably would have been the front end, and the gear, then you got to re-rig and let the tail down easy because there's no weight forward. You know, they didn't do that, so it came down, and I think that's when the wing strut bent and the tail got all messed up, the tail wheel. But, boy, they worked. They got a hell of a job done. A lot of damage is done when people try to recover them and they don't know what they're doing. You know, they cut things instead of taking them apart. This goes on like that. Let's see. That's on the Noatak. Yeah. Nothing in the background but a edge of the riverbank. We're fueling up to leave in the morning.
Any sense of what time of year this is? I noticed it's dark.
It was in the fall. Yeah, it was getting in the fall. I have got to...
Sorry for a moment.
Background noise here.
Times like this, when you're out in the field during this is the early mid 70s, do people always use hand pumps? It seems like now there'd be.
There wasn't no electricity there.
Yeah. Now, do people bring generators along these days?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. All kinds of stuff.
You get those little Honda generators that are.
Yeah.
The size
but generally, for the fueling, it's a hand pump or it's cans. Mm-hmm. In this case, we're burning about 25 gallons an hour. Why? We needed to put in a fair amount, so drums and a pump.
Did what, like in his operation, generally have fuel?
He had fuel at Kotzebue. Mm-hmm. And generally, the trips weren't such a length, he could fuel up there. And if he was over, like, say, to Umiat or something, they had fueling there. And, several villages, fuel pumps.
Did you see yesterday's news, Miner? About the guy who flew his 185 both to the North Pole and the
South
Pole.
Oh, yeah, I know him. Yeah.
Do you?
Yeah. He lives at Selby Lake quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And Manly. He helped him out a couple of things.
I didn't have a chance to look at the article. Was he flying out of Barrow or for the North Pole? Or?
I flew out of Canada somewhere. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Seems like quite an accomplishment for...
He's been working at it for quite a while, yeah. He'd flown the airplane in Antarctica for some other people. Mm-hmm. Some sort of scientific operation. And then he got the chance to buy it. So he did. Got it up here, and then he had to work on it quite a bit. It was getting pretty worn. And he's been planning on this for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. 2 or 3 years, anyhow. So he finally made it. That's pretty good.
How do you pronounce his last name?
Mortvedt. And there we're flying from the crash site to Kotzebue, and you can see the silt all over the pilot there. And if you look close, you can see the instruments are all cocked, and none of them were any good.
Are the instruments rebuildable after something like that?
Not generally worth it, no. You can send them in for a trade-in, maybe they can use the cases, but that's about it.
Never even considered that when you said that about the heaviest takeoff Buck said he'd ever made.
Yeah, and he carried some awful loads in this airplane, you see. We're roaring down the gravel bar, and I'm thinking this kind of slow to accelerate, but then the engine wasn't in the best condition. And then Buck said later he had picked a point where he was going to shut her down, think this over, maybe leave me behind or whatever he had to do. Get rid of some weight, though we didn't have any to speak of, and that's when it came off.
Mm. Have you talked to Buck this spring?
Yeah, I talked to his daughter the other day. He's should be in Anchorage now. Mm. Goes to the airfare down there. Mm. We think he's having a little Alzheimer's problem.
Mm. So. Is he going to make it up to Fairbanks?
I expect he'll get here sooner or later. Yeah, had no engine on it yet. Mm-hmm. Well, you can see the engine in the foreground. Mm-hmm. That's how far I had to slide it. I set up a tripod, lifted it up. See, I was staying at a USGS camp, and they had a couple of pieces of scrap plywood they'd used in the helicopters for carrying loads. Mm-hmm. I put one of them under it and tied it to it, and I slid the damn thing over to the airplane, redid the tripod, and lifted the engine up. The magnetos were shot, of course, and they have these blocks where the wires go in, and the magnetos I got to go with, that brought over to put on there, weren't exactly the same. So I had the distributor blocks held down with black iron wire. Oh, Jesus. Yes, it was something else. But that's what it takes if you're going to be out in the bush doing this stuff. You have to improvise because, you know, you just can't send people back and forth so far to get this little bitty pieces.
You have to have pretty good judgment about it, too, because some things could be dangerous trying to...
Oh, yeah, you've got to figure out, you know, and it's... Well, we weren't going to have any radios, we knew that, so... Anything, so there wasn't going to be any interference problems. It was just a matter of making sure that the spark wasn't jumping and a bunch of other stuff, so it worked out okay. That's about what I... Yeah, I got the engine back on it there, yeah. Yeah, I think we're getting ready to fuel up.
Is that a fuel drum for fueling in the foreground, or is that...
It's hard to say. I think it was.
Mm. Seems like the... Looks like something's missing off the end of the wing there.
Yeah, there was no wing tip on it either. Mm-hmm. Couldn't do much about that. Mm. That's part of the wing tip hanging down. Whatever, I don't know. Yeah. When we landed at Kotzebue, there's two runways there. One parallels the beach, is gravel. And we had to land on that one because you couldn't hardly turn the wheel by this time. The sand and grit got into it. And we got down there, and I had to jump out and put a crowbar in the tail wheel to kind of help it around. I'm running back up, throwing the crowbar in and trying to get into the plane as it's taxiing slowly. And I got up and said, "Ooh, that's good." I looked up through the window. And here was Alaska Airlines, the full load of tourists, everybody taking pictures of this damn wreck taxiing in. And we got over to Buck's parking spot. Of course, a bunch of people come over, and there's one pilot. He says, "Why didn't you do this? Why didn't you do that?" And I said, "Try the wheel." And he climbs up, and he grabbed the wheel, and it didn't move. And he got in there, and he could barely move it. And Buck's a pretty powerful guy, though. But once you get it set, you don't have to move much anyhow. But yeah, it was getting bad. Quite a trip.
And of course, you've got the season. You said this was fall. The season inspiring you to.
Oh God, we had to get it out of there. Mm-hmm. Plus, in fact, I think he had some kind of payment to make, or he was going to lose the airplane. He had a whole bunch of money into it. After that, we referred to it as our otter. He says, "You just saved my life right there." That's all he had was this at a 185.
I can't tell who that is.
That's a helicopter mechanic. Okay. Bill, he'd come over and shoot the breeze with me every now and then. Yeah. He picked up all the pieces from the windshield and stuck them back in place. And stuck paper in them so they'd stay in place. Mm-hmm. Tape and stuff. A lot of the side windows were broken out up back aft.
Was the pilot who wrecked the plane hurt?
No.
It's amazing to see the damage to some of these and people walk away from them.
Well, the old otter lands very slowly. Mm-hmm. And he probably wasn't going too fast, and he's bouncing when he went off the end. Mm-hmm. Hit the water, and then it slowly went over.
The picture that amazes me that you said no one was hurt in was the yellow plane that you lifted out of the China that was just...
Oh, yeah.
It was mangled. You said no one was...
You know, it crashed because they were going so slow that it stalled. Mm-hmm. So it just kind of fell. Mm-hmm. What happened there is the guy in the back seat damn near drowned. Mm-hmm. The pilot got him out. He says, "I don't know what happened. I'm turning and it just fell out of the sky." And everybody's looking at him like... Well, he was one of the... It was Tommy Fouts. And he'd been flying for United Airlines. He wasn't used to a Cub anymore. And that was another one. That was at Fouts' Runway. That's Phil Prox in the foreground. He had come in to fuel up early in the morning, taking a guy out hunting. And you see that dirt behind him there? Mm-hmm. They brought over a truck and laid down a string of gravel or something. And he happened to hit right where the gate first opened. And here, so here's a 2-foot-high mound of dirt. Over she went. Snap bang. You can see the end of my boom truck boom sticking out there in the corner. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was working in the shop. Phil comes walking up. And he says, what the hell? He looked kind of dusty and flustered. And he says, what happened? He said, I wrecked my damned airplane. I said, I'll get the boom truck. Years later, I came across an airplane again. It belonged to a fellow named Schotten, I think it was Scotton. And I'm looking at it, and I said, that sure is familiar. So I went looking, and I said, here, I want to show you something. And here was this picture of this thing.
That'd be a horrible way to start the day.
It was, for sure. Oh, yeah. Snapped her right over. Oof. Here again, you're going pretty slow.
Mm-hmm. Were the people who were putting the gravel down, were they...
The Fouts'.
They knew it was a runway and everything?
Oh, yeah, the Fouts'es put it down. You know, they were going to get right down there in the morning and take care of it.
But okay.
Phil beat them to it. Oh, yeah. There was always something happening around there. I was down just off the runway one afternoon working on something, and this plane comes in, lands, and he's heading upriver for their garage and house and some more. And I thought, God damn, he's fast. And the next thing I heard was whackety, whackety, whack. I said, oh, shit. So I finished what I was doing and wandered up to have a beer and see what was going on. And too fast, all right. Couldn't get her stopped and went down the wing of a 180. What I'd heard was the prop hitting the wing. It was quite an operation for many years.
At its peak, how many planes do you suppose were based out of Fouts?
There must have been 20 or 30. Mm. Yeah. You could look at it in the summer, and there'd be float planes lined up for 2 blocks. Let's see, covered all in the water sitting there. And on the other side, you had a bunch of them parked. It was a little bit tight, but not to a guy that knew how to fly.
Did the fact that there was a strip there, other than it was a subdivision, did the fact that there was a strip there, is that what led you to move over there?
Oh, no, no, no. I was working for Weens, and I bought a couple lots down there and built this cabin. And then, of course, everything went off from there, and then the runway went in, and everybody was having a good time. Mm-hmm. It's just one of those flukes, the way it worked out. Mm. I had a service truck, big old van. I was running all around the countryside. Mm. There's the otter. My God, the engine did come off. The big guy there was the pilot, Leonard. Large Leonard, we called him. And that was before the water came up. Because after it came up, you could only see the belly.
So they didn't get the engine out of there before the water came up?
That's why no. Yeah, it must have broke loose then.
Did Large Leonard fly for Buck after that?
I think he did, mm-hmm. But I'm not sure now.
Boy, that's an awful sight.
I saw that. No, I didn't see this. This was one of Buck's pictures. And when I first saw it, well, there was nothing showing but the belly, and I said, shit, we can't do anything. Current's running the beat hell. It actually shifted it. We had some lines tied onto it over some anchors on the shore, and it actually shifted a bit.
How much does that engine weigh?
Oh, I don't know right off. No, I couldn't even guess right now. It was a Pratt & Whitney 1340. Let's see, what do we got here? Oh, yes. That was above up in the Fort Yukon area, out in the Yukon Flats. The engine quit, 185, belonged to a guy named Roy Stoltz. Another fellow was flying it. Anyhow, the engine kind of started to quit. There was a bunch of lakes there. He's a little high, so he circled, and he circled once too often and didn't make it to the lake. It was kind of on the edge of it. I flew up, took pictures, and took the radios out, some other stuff, brought them to town before they get stolen. And a guy bought the wreckage from the insurance company, went up there in the wintertime, a little snowblower, cleaned off a runway on the ice, and disassembled it, and had one of Ween's sky vans come up, and they shoved it in the back and brought it back to town. Yeah. Oh, yeah, just didn't make the lake. There's a little lake out here below Esther, just past Esther. Big dredge pond, actually. And for a long time, there was kind of a little road that led down to that lake to pick up wrecked airplanes. People would be coming back from Mendel Flats, not enough gas. Well, we can make the dredge pond. And a good number of them were a couple of hundred foot short.
I think that the dredge is still there.
Oh, probably, yeah. Yeah.
I was looking at Google Earth, the satellite image site, and I spotted the dredge on the satellite image from the satellite view. You can see the dredge from space.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think that's the one they moved over the hill to Sheep Creek. So it's across the hill from the Esther Pond. Mm-hmm. I'm not real sure, but I think that's the way it worked out.
I wanted to go back there and look at that dredge, but gold miners tend to get a little...
Oh, yeah. When you want to look at a dredge, you go over to the one out of Chattanooga. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, 185. There's Buck and his maw. I think that's at Kotzebue. Probably, yeah, looks like it. Yeah, he didn't. At 185, this and that, he kind of went to the malls. They're cheaper and they get off better. And they're easier to load, a whole bunch of things, and fast. Did a lot of work with them.
At the height of Buck's operation, how many planes?
Just before he kind of burnt out after many years. And when he was selling off to leave, this would have been in the mid-80s maybe. No, maybe not that much. Right around that era, early 80s. He had two twin beaches that we call West Winds. They were tail draggers with turbines on them, the D-18 model. There were two otters, a beaver. There might have been a Cessna in there yet. A mall, too, I'm sure. But he sold pretty much all of it off and went back to Pennsylvania. And many years later, I'm working away, and he comes walking up. I said, "What are you doing here?" And he says, "Well, after 7 years, I figured that me and the oil business are not compatible." So he bought up an air taxi certificate and went flying out of Kotzebue again, summers only, float planes. Yeah, we worked together an awful lot through the years.
How old is Buck now?
3 years younger than me. He'll be 73.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard Buck's name through the years. My dad knew him.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Anybody that was up around that part of the country knew him, yeah. Did an awful lot of work for USGS and Park Service, everybody. Then, of course, Park Service got its own Air Force.
Another name I've heard through the years is Marge Baker's.
Yeah, Baker Aviation. Her husband started it. He was a hell of a pilot, Bob Baker. They had a medical emergency somewhere. And he got the nurse, and they flew out, and the weather was horrible, and they crashed. Killed them both. And Marge kept trying to run it for years. I think it's pretty much defunct now.
Who's the Baker who won the Iditarod?
That's one of the sons, John Baker, yeah.
Does he have anything to do with aviation?
I don't think so. That's Buck's wife and his kids. Two boys.
Bond.
Oh, yeah.
Bond little boys.
Yeah.
Kotzebue?
Kotzebue, spring.
Mm-hmm. Is Buck still married?
No. Mm-hmm. No, he never remarried. Oh, that's the mall taking off over there, yeah. It was a good picture. And that was on a different job, getting the wrecked 170 down in the, I think they call it Canute Flats. It's below Bettles. Lots of lakes, flat ground. There's Dick McLean in the foreground. It took me over there to take a look at this damn thing. Which was... I had to get a helicopter for that one.
Just too far gone, too wrecked.
Oh, yeah. It was kind of a bad spot. So far out, for one thing. And he'd landed and changed his mind and screwed up. Hit the bank of this little lake and took one landing gear completely out of it. And I got in the airplane, and I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to do, and I'm digging, and all of a sudden I realize I'm below the belly of the airplane. It just ripped out a great big hole out of it, and there wasn't much I could do there with that sort of a setup. And the prop was bent, and there was some other damage. So at that time, ERA had a surplus S-61T. Had a couple of big, had the piston engine removed, and had just a couple of turbines stuffed into it. Quite a machine. Ugly old bugger. But they went up and lifted it for me. Took the wings off, tied them alongside, and everything went that way. That was probably just going over there. Yeah, you can see the flats down there. Maybe it's the Yukon.
Fall or spring, huh?
Spring, yeah. Early spring. Been over on it. Yeah, you can see the tracks. You see, he landed here. And he went around. And you can see that bank up there where he hit. Little point. Well, it had a new engine in it. Bigger one had been converted. He wasn't too used to a controllable prop. Didn't fly an awful lot. Went out caribou hunting and made a mistake. If he could have turned a little sharper, he'd been all right. If he'd have took back off, he'd have been all right. Just all kinds of things. Just pure, I might say, just pretty pilot error on that one. Good part of them are. Yeah, that's the wreck. He got right up on the bank with it. You can see there's no right landing gear at all.
Just tore the belly out.
Huh? Oh, yeah. Yeah. Nothing there. Nothing there to work with. Mm. There he is. Famous mechanic. Shredded up the nose cowl and everything, too, yeah.
We're back at
the start, yeah.
Well, that covers all of the...
Then when he came back, he went into the Iditarod country, Inoco, the Inoco country. And ended up at around Takotna, McGrath, Gaines Creek, that sort of thing. Funny deal, there's a guy I know, he's going to mine on Gaines Creek. I laughed. I said, what's funny? My granddad mined here. He had it originally, staked it out. Would have been about, you know, early 1900s.
How many, your grandfather, how many kids did he have?
There were three girls.
Three girls?
Yeah.
But, didn't he, your dad's father?
Dad's father died when my dad was around 10. He drowned in the Spokane River. So dad didn't get here until, must have been the mid-20s, something like that. I know he's in one of the real early classes at the university. You've seen this picture of the eight ball club? He's one of them.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know what year that was.
He was an only child, though?
Oh, no. He had about four brothers.
Okay.
Yeah.
None of them up in this country? Or
no.
Okay.
One stayed in Spokane. One was over at Seattle. And one I never met, the oldest, he was, I don't know, the last I knew, he died in an old folks' home or a veteran's home down in the south somewhere. Yeah, strange thing. All Swedes, of course. It was Oscar and Otto, and I can't remember the oldest one's name. And my dad, who went by the name of Andy Anderson, signed everything A.E. Anderson. His brothers called him Adolf, and he denied it till the day he died. But I think it probably was Adolf. It's common Swedish name. But when you're in, there's wars coming up and things are happening, why you shift gears.
Yeah.
So he always claimed it was Andrew, but I have my doubts.
I hear your dad's name mentioned some of those Project Jukebox tapes from like Jim Hutchison or Jess Bachner. Your dad's name pops up here and again.
Oh, yeah.
I think it was the one where, I think it was Jim Hutchison's got his dentures melted there. Can't
That's the one, yeah. Yeah, Pop was hauling antimony out of the Stampede mine. And the trail went by where this plane that they were working on was. And Hutch and Jess Bachner was over there being his helper. And Jess told me years later, he says, your old man come by with the greenest logs you've ever seen for me to cut up and laugh like hell and keep going. And he'd throw in a log, drop off for firewood for him. I don't know what that deal was. I guess there wasn't much around there. Oh, yeah.
In that story, too, they talk about once a week, usually, I think it was the weekend, maybe it was Wednesday night, they'd be in their cabin, and Fanny Quigley would come out and put a few rounds through their chimney and just to let them know.
I don't know.
Good evening. It's recorded in that audio. I just bought a book on Fanny
Quigley. I know Dad knew her because he was around that part of the country for several years. See, him and Mom got married at Ferry, and then they were around that part of the country for 3-4 years, I think, before they moved to Fairbanks.
Mining?
No, he did some mining, but basically it was trapping and mining, and after he and Mom got married, he talked about working in some of the drift mines in the wintertime. Yeah. They never talk about it too much. Some stories about trapping.
You said you have memories of going up the Chena River way up.
Oh, yeah. That would have been about 19... Let's see, he told me been about 1939, I expect. And he took on a job to run a mine at Pine Creek on the Upper Chena. It's all on the Eielson Reservation now. Yeah, I had this memory in my head of a light swinging around, and a bird with wheels. And I didn't put it all together for 50 years, I suppose. And finally it dawned on me, we were in this Wanigan on a sled behind the cats, with a gas lantern swinging, and a Stan Avo box, the gas box. That's the way they had them imprinted, with this eagle with wheels on it for the avgas. So it had all come together there.
Funny how those memories linger.
Oh, yeah, and then there was the They'd actually brought up a tricycle for me. Mom was cooking. And of course, I'm ricocheting around the place, being 2 and a half. And me and the tricycle back doing a hornet's nest. And I didn't know what to do. I'm just screaming. One of the guys was working, come walking up the creek for something. Got me and took me into the cook shack, and they stripped all my clothes off. My mother said, those hornets went around and around that place, and they'd come right back and sting you again. And one of the funny stories they told me was they took in this kind of lightweight hydraulic pipe sort of for shifting it one on a nozzle, and it all got kinked a bit on the bunks on the sleds. So they got me outfitted with a jack and a handle and shoved me in the pipe and tell me I could get inside that pipe and then I'd work my jack. And then they tell me when to quit, I guess. I don't remember that part. I don't even remember this part at all. There's just people are telling me this. And they said, geez, I walked around half the summer dragging that jack and that handle looking for another piece of pipe. Ain't that some talk about child labor? 2 and a half-year-old kid. Yeah, because I turned 3 that fall.
Did your dad eventually, they settled down in Fairbanks because family and school and all that?
Well, they just ended up in Fairbanks, and he's working for the FE company because he was running the cat when they were digging the ditch. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's before Mom or after Mom. See, they got married in 1932, I think, at what's now the FE Gold Camp out on the Steese Highway. And, 4th of July.
Is that where they met?
No, they met down at Ferry.
Okay.
It's that anyhow. Mom decided that's enough, so she went up and snagged him. Mm-hmm. Away they went. Yeah.
I'll go ahead and shut the recorder off.
But they all kind of fade away now. Mm-hmm. You asking about this brought it back a lot of them.
Yeah, it's, other than all the other unfortunate about the hangar burning down, losing those pictures. It's,
shit. Yeah. Well, that was the strangest thing, too. I think it was just a couple days ahead of that. I'm wheeling around the corner coming over here, and I'm thinking, God damn, one of these days I'm going to come in the corner, and that's going to be a burnt bunch of wreckage. Mm. Premonitions are really something. Mm. And yet to this day, I don't know how the hell it started.
Mm. You said the furnace was worked on the day before.
Oh, no, they'd been worked on earlier. They were there in fine shape. Mm. Something, who knows, maybe there was a cord back there, and a cat hit it and sparked an arc. Mm. It just happened. Nice, who knows. Mm. I lost my poor kitty cats. Mm.
That had to have been a hot fire with all the paint.
Oh, Jesus, yeah. And it stayed contained inside for the longest time. Mm. And then about the time the fire trucks got here is when the roof caved in. Mm. It was all sheetrocked and everything else, and everything was burning inside. Mm. Surprised me that the office burnt so thoroughly. Mm. But then there was a window there that didn't fit too good, and it would have got a hell of a draft out of that. Mm. That would have been about the only place there would have been a big draft until everything let go.
Well, I suppose I'll go get my hound and take her for a car ride. She gets mad at me if I don't give her a ride every other day, and it's been a couple days.
So. It sounds like Sam drives around with his dogs. 3 of them in a Volkswagen.
And that Volkswagen.
Oh, Jesus. Sam is worth a couple $1 million. Mm-hmm. And he puts around that Volkswagen. It's happier than hell.
I met Sam.
Of course, there's an awful lot of guys got money that you don't think about because they're not ostentatious. They don't have all this big shit.
Yeah, I learned that lesson. Like I said, the first time I was at an auction with Bobby Miller there, I was kind of thinking, just typical crowd of Fairbanksons, and someone later said, well, that was Bobby Miller. It's like, well, who?
Fairbanks' first millionaire, local boy.
I haven't heard about Bobby Miller, but I imagine his wife was in bad health, and I think he's in bad health.
Oh, God, he's up in his 90s somewhere now.
The person who kind of amazed me was Urban Rahoy. He doesn't look his age.
Yeah, 94 and going strong. Mm. I run in the store one day, and of course I've known him ever since I was a kid. How's she going, Urban? Good. God damn. I said, Jesus, you're looking good. You're in better shape than me. And I was laughing about it. He said, well, this is one thing about it. He said, it was all the wife's doing. She's the one that kept me tuned up and going. Now, she's been dead for 3-4 years, but he's just going strong. See, on the paper, he's going to go to fly in a B-17 again. He was a 17 pilot in World War II.
Mm-hmm. He's going to go fly one somewhere? Or?
Yeah, there's something there. He got to ride in a P-51 here a while back. He went outside, and there's places that rent, you can go pay and take a ride. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, yeah, he'll get to go to B-17 because of his record. And he's still completely legal pilot. He's still flying his own 180 around. Mm-hmm. Now, I expect he might get in the right seats. Hard to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was at that thing down at the Pioneer Air Museum. I didn't even know he had. I never heard of that. Ptarmigan Creek? Or
Ptarmigan? Yeah, it's over near the border.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's
there's
quite a lot.
There's places out there that I've been here all my life, never heard about.
Oh, before. Yeah. There's lots of them around.
Of course, they're getting fewer and fewer as the Park Service buys people.
Well, so the people are in the park, but there's a lot of them out here on these lakes. It's built up pretty nice places. Mm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, down there by where my dad had his place, it was amazing flying out there, all the, especially along the rivers. All the cabins and lodges. And
well, you look at Salter River, from the bridge clean up to the old Caribou Mine, that son of a bitch is a city. Mm-hmm. It's houses all up and down it. Mm-hmm. And it used to be that there was, you know, half a dozen cabins on it, that was all. Mm-hmm. And people got to realize that, hey, this is the place to be. Mm-hmm. As you know, it wasn't so much before, but the snow machine makes such a difference. Mm-hmm. You can unload down here at the bridge, whip right up or go up Johnson Road and go across the hills. The snow machine is nothing to it. You're not slogging along on snowshoes or dog teams or some other bullshit deal. And there's enough up there. There's trails that are just rock solid.
There was more mining up the Salcha than I'd ever...
Oh, yeah. There was a lot of activity up there. Yeah. See, Caribou Mine is up there about 70 miles, and I think there's stuff above that even. Oh, yeah.
Was it... I was sitting here one day, and there was a gentleman, I don't know who it was, and he said there was dredges up there at one point. Remember that conversation? Maybe I'm thinking of the Good Pasture.
Well, Good Pasture was mostly hard rock. Mm. And, but there was a lot of stuff there. There was a stamp mill. There was all kinds of shit from the early days before Pogo got in there. Because the Tweetons were in on that, some of them. We knew this old boy Oscar Tweeton pretty well. His brother Barney, I think, was in there mining to beat hell. There was three brothers, and they were all up in the Good Pasture for on and off for years, trapping, mining, carrying on.
I didn't learn until about 2 weeks ago. I always thought the Good Pasture was pasture like a cow would graze in.
No. No. S-T-E-R, that's it, yeah.
Well, Jim, I'm going to make a run for it.
Well, alrighty.
Thank you.